Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Communication Connection, a show designed to help you change your life on so many levels and to empower you to improve your relationships through effective communication. It's Wednesday, April the 5th, 2011, and I'm your host, Jill Robinson, coming to you live from Dundas, Ontario, Canada. For those of you who are used to my 1 o'clock show, I do apologize. We're starting a little late today. We had some technical difficulties, but we're carrying on through. The topic of our show today is energy psychology with Leslie Hannell. Leslie is a registered psychotherapist who operates a private practice in Dundas, Ontario, Canada, helping individuals, couples, and families with challenges of life. She has a master's degree in psychology from the University of Guelph and has been in private practice for over 25 years. As well as traditional talk therapy, Leslie also uses many other tools from her training in transactional analysis, energy psychology, and shamanism. She is past executive director of the Social Planning Council of Peel, past director of Women in Crisis, which is an emergency shelter and crisis center for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, and has worked with Planned Parenthood of Hamilton, offering a program of how to talk to your kids about sexuality. Leslie also has an Arabian horse and uses equine-assisted psychotherapy with clients as needed and when appropriate. Leslie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jill. Thanks for having me on today.
Thanks, Leslie. Thanks so much for your patience with the technical problems we had this morning. I appreciate you starting a bit late, but okay. it's all good. Well, onward and upward.
Yep.
Before we get started with my questions, I just wanted to share with my listeners our call-in number so that if you have any opportunity to call in with questions. Now, I know we're starting late, but still, don't be shy. The number is 1-858-956-2139. So let's get started. We have a lot of information today. We've got an hour show today instead of a half an hour because Leslie certainly has a lot to share, and I really want my listeners to enjoy and learn from the time that we are together today. So the first question I want to ask you, Leslie, is can you tell everybody what actually is energy psychology?
Well, Jill, it's a new branch, a relatively new branch of psychology that was started up in the late 70s or 80s. And psychologists at the time were beginning to look at some of the work that acupuncturists were doing and people who were doing Reiki and hands-on healing and therapeutic touch and such. And they began to look at this whole system of healing and thought, I wonder if we can use this for emotional issues in our work. And they started doing a lot of research and testing, and people were using it on clients and finding that, yes, sure enough, using things within our energy system, acupoints and chakras and meridians, et cetera, they could actually take stress right away from some of these emotional issues people were dealing with. So they found it very effective and labeled it energy psychology. In fact, my teacher, Dr. Fred Gallo, is a clinical psychologist down in Pennsylvania who I studied with for about 6 years, and he coined the term energy psychology to refer to this kind of working with emotional and psychological issues using the body's energy system rather than just talking.
Wow. You know, it's funny because I've known you for so long and we've worked together, and I actually didn't realize that it was actually coined by him. I know you talked about him to me before, but I didn't realize that. So, you and I over the years, we've talked about core beliefs, and I know there's a lot of people out there that, you know, have a belief within them about certain things. So, in your opinion, as a professional, how exactly do we form these early core beliefs in life?
Well, Jill, really the phrase, you know, we are a product of our past is really appropriate here, because as we grow up, you know, we're born as these little sort of free spirits. And then life starts to happen to us. So depending on where we grow up, you know, what family we're in, whether we have money or don't, or what part of the world we live in, what century it is, we start to develop assumptions or decisions about things based on what's happening in our life. So as life goes on, and you know, if we're a firstborn or last born of a family, life can be very different. And depending on how things are going in our life, we sort of put things together in a way that makes sense to us. And this is all subconscious, and it starts right from birth. So these decisions, we make decisions about ourselves, other people, and the world in general. And these decisions, while they may make sense to us at the time, may not be correct. So, example, a child growing up in a home where they're being abused or, you know, physically or sexually abused may feel that it's because they're not good enough, there's something wrong with them. And at the time, that makes sense. So they take on that belief, and it stays with them through their whole life, and it becomes what we call a core belief. It's like the subprogram that runs the computer that is us. And so it's sort of akin to if you grew up in a family where you were told that 2 and 2 equals 5, and in your family it did, everybody agreed that 2 and 2 equaled 5, you would grow up believing that, that 2 and 2 equaled 5. And then later on in your life, things just aren't adding up anymore, and you're not getting the same answer as anybody else. So one day somebody might say to you, well, 2 and 2 is 4, not 5. And at that moment, you might make a shift in your belief system. But at the time when we're growing up, all of this stuff might make sense because it fits. So as we, you know, go through all our relationships with our family members and our teachers at school and our peers, we're forming these kind of core beliefs, and they stick. And so what happens is that little free child that's born develops into what we call the adapted child. So we adapt to our environment by learning how to fit in. Every child just wants to be safe and loved. So we learn how to do that. So some children may end up becoming pleasers. They'll do everything to please everybody, and they don't want to disappoint anyone because they don't feel like they'll be loved anymore. Some kids may learn to be really efficient and look after everyone in their home, their family or their friends, because that's how they feel important or valuable or loved. Other kids might even learn to be bullies or rebels because bad attention is better than no attention. So in this way, we develop, but it's all subconscious. So this is why sometimes we can't pinpoint what it is that's our problem or why we're stuck.
You know, I'm listening to you talk. I love your analogy of the, you know, 2 plus 2 is 5, because it's almost like, as you know, humans, we're born and we're like computers, right? You program the parents and the people around the child, you know, literally are programming the kid. And so then, you know, when they get older, like you say, it's like a core belief because it's been programmed. Then somebody says, no, 2 plus 2 is 4, and you're going, what? And it's only because it's literally being programmed that way. So I've never thought of it that way. That's a really neat, really good analogy. So a lot of people that I've talked to in the past say, well, why can't we just stop thinking that way? I mean, you know, why can't I just stop thinking that way? What's the answer to that?
Well, that's a good question, and I have a lot of people who come to me who say that. You know, I really want to change this, but I just can't. And the first step is awareness. So I go through, you know, in a first session with a client, you know, talking about certain things and drawing some pictures and explaining to them this whole concept of how they develop those beliefs in the first place. And then, so I always say awareness is the first step in any change. So becoming aware, first of all, of how some of these belief systems developed and what they are is the first step in change, because once we want change, we have to, you know, understand what it is we're working on in order to be able to change that. So that's the first step. And then from there, like sometimes a person may be unhappy in their life and want to change, but they're not even aware of what these issues are they have to change. So sometimes why don't we change? It's because we're not aware of it. And then the second point would be sometimes we're so attached to these belief systems that it's really scary, that we can't imagine letting go of them. You know, we don't really have the alternative. You know, well, if I stop pleasing people, then what will happen? So sometimes we're just so stuck in it, and actually it gets stuck in our whole energy system. So it may be a thought, and even when we become aware of it, stuck within our energy system, and we're not aware of that. It could be stuck within any of those three levels, you know, our aura or our biofield, our chakras. Can be clogging up the flow of energy in our body. So even though we're saying, I want to change this, it's sort of like a river that's clogged up with too many leaves and mud and branches, and so the water can't flow. So what the energy psychology does there is to help to clear away those blocks, and that helps us to let go of those old beliefs as well. So there's the cognitive aspect, our thoughts and our beliefs, but then the energetic aspect is very important too.
And that's a really neat analogy with the river, because it is an underlying thing that you're not even aware of, right? So it's like you have
exactly.
to, the energy psychology addresses that and, you know, gets that river flowing so you can get to the root and bring it to the surface, so to speak. So
exactly.
So that's really, really interesting. So how does the energy psychology tapping work? Talked about that with me, and I know you've done that work with myself and the clients I sent you, and even my kids. You've worked with and done such amazing things with my children, and I just wanted to know, you have talked and taught us about this energy psychology tapping work, but can you just tell our listeners about that?
Okay, well, I mentioned that we work at the three main levels, the aura or the biofield, that bubble of energy that's around our body. And as I explained to people, this level of the energy can get clogged up, just like in Charlie Brown, who's the one with the dust all around him. I can't think of his head for the moment. His name, Pigpen. Pigpen and Charlie Brown. You know how they draw the pictures and he's got that dirt all around him? At that level, our energy field can get clogged up. So sometimes we clear there. From there, the energy flows into our body through the chakras, the seven main energy centers, these funnels that bring the energy into our body. And this comes out of Chinese medicine. They can get clogged up too, like your kitchen sink. You know, too much food or fat in the kitchen sink, the energy's not flowing. So we can clear at the chakra level as well, and I do that. From there, the energy flows through our body through these meridians. These are like the energy highways in our body. And at this level, this is the level an acupuncturist works at. They know where along these energy highways, these energy meridians, to insert needles to either increase or decrease the flow of energy or to clear blocks. So an acupuncturist works using the needles to create clarity and flow. In energy psychology, we tap. So some people have heard of this. You know, it's called like tapping therapy. In fact, some of my clients have joked and called me the tap-tap lady because we do spend time tapping on some of these acupoints in the body. So we work with 14 main meridians in the body. Each one is associated with a specific organ in the body and also specific emotional issues. So, for example, the heart chakra is related to issues of, you know, holding on to anger, resentment, you know, unloving thoughts and judgment and things like that. So if there was a block in there, we would want to be tapping on the point on the heart meridian, which is actually on the index fingernail, on the thumb side of the index fingernail is where we tap for that. So what we do is we tap on 14 points in the body, one point on each of those 14 meridians. And as we tap, you can actually touch and breathe as well, but generally we start with tapping. So you tap on these points, these acupoints, and as we do that, it actually stimulates the energy in that meridian. While we're tapping, we're also thinking of whatever upsetting thought it is we're working on. So if a person was coming and they were anxious, let's say, and maybe their anxiety had to do with public speaking, so I would have them bring to mind that thought. They would think about public speaking, and I would say, and can you feel the anxiety coming up? And they would say yes, and I would say, okay, now we're going to tap, and whatever point it was that I was having them tap on, or we would tap perhaps on all 14 points, depending on what was right for their situation at that time. As they were tapping, holding on to this thought, we're balancing the energy in each of the meridians. So the idea is that the thought comes in, disrupts the energy, and as we tap on these acupoints, we bring back balance to each of those meridians. So the thought no longer disrupts us. And that's where the shift happens. The thought is there, but at the end of the tapping sequence, people will often say things like, wow, it just doesn't bother me anymore. Or it kind of feels further away. Like I don't feel the same kind of anxiety over it. So it seems that while we're working on the bringing these meridians and the flow of the energy back into balance, the thought loses its power to disrupt us. So that's sort of how it works. There's several theories within the field of energy psychology as to what exactly is happening. And, you know, it hasn't been conclusive yet as to what exactly it is. Some people have said by tapping and stimulating the energy, it actually sort of creates a release of the block. The block is sort of flushed through as we stimulate that energy. There has been a theory that it's perhaps just distraction, but that doesn't have a lot of support. So there's several theories, but we know that by doing it, it has effect. So from my purposes, it's not really so important as to why it happens, it's that it does happen.
Mm-hmm. And that what you just said there is the key, is that, you know, you've helped so many people, and it's obviously this tapping is working because, you know, of the success. So, you know, regardless of exactly how it's working, I mean, I don't know how the computer works, but it works, right? So
if I could just add in an example there, Jill, everyone's heard of cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, and there was a study done recently that I heard talked about at a conference last year in Toronto, the Energy Psychology Conference, and they talked about taking a group of war vets that had come back from Afghanistan, and they took half of these war vets and put them into a group that was going to have cognitive behavioral therapy. The other group went into a group that was going to have energy psychology tapping. Now, these war vets had extremely high levels of post-traumatic stress. They couldn't function. They were, you know, stuttering, couldn't sleep, having flashbacks, couldn't function socially anymore. And their level of post-traumatic stress was extremely high. So the group that was taken and given cognitive behavioral therapy, they did their first session. Their stress did come down, but only a little bit. The group that was doing the energy tapping, after one session of tapping, their stress went from, let's say it was up at a 90 out of 100, dropped down to about a 10 in one session of tapping, whereas the cognitive behavioral group dropped from, say, 90 to 80. So cognitive behavioral therapy is a very well-accepted and researched model of therapy. It takes about 10 sessions, though, so you sort of chip away at it. And what we're trying to do is get more research to show how the energy psychology, the tapping, brings it down so much faster, and it stays, because the people who had the energy tapping, a week later when they came back for the second session, their level was still down at that 10 level. It was still low, so it stayed.
Wow, you can't get a better example than that. Holy cow. Wow. So, and the other thing you mentioned earlier is about thoughts. And, you know, there's so much research out there about how powerful our thoughts are. And obviously the tapping and the work that you do, you know, enters that sort of same thing, right? So that's powerful stuff. So we have some listeners and some people on the chat line that have come in. I'm just letting everybody know that we started a bit late today. So if you're tuning in and you're finding out that we're starting a bit late, we had some technical difficulties, but we're working through. So thanks for listening. Glad you guys are online and on the chat. And we're going to move through some more questions with Leslie. Leslie, what sorts of problems or challenges is tapping effective for? As, like, give examples to the listeners as far as how what examples of challenges or problems would it help with?
Well, I find it's really good for anxiety, fears and phobias. I've dealt with a lot of people who have had various fears of flying, fears of public speaking, fears of needles. I have a dentist friend who sends me patients who are terrified to have needles at the dentist, and I've worked with them using these techniques, and it's been very effective. Past trauma, you know, post-traumatic stress, people who have been in a car accident and can't get back in the car again after because they're suffering from the post-traumatic stress, it'll work with that to help them get over that fear. What we do is we associate trauma with a memory, and what this does is it cuts that link so that you can remember the incident, but there's no longer trauma. It's also very good for people who have, like, self-esteem issues. Sometimes self-esteem relates back to some of those core beliefs from childhood, right? Why is our self-esteem low? There's always a reason. And so if we can get to the bottom of what that is, we can clear it. Same with, you know, relationships. If sometimes a person's having problems in a marriage, it may be because of some issues they had in a previous marriage or, you know, relationships with one of their parents while growing up or what their parents' marriage was like. They may have associated with that some fears, some belief systems, some assumptions which they're now projecting onto their current relationship. So we can use it to clear away some of those underlying issues that are affecting current relationships. It's really useful for so many things, Joe, but it's hard to know. I mean, you know, there's usually anybody who comes to me, there's usually something going on that I'll at some point in our work say, this may be really effective. Would you like to try it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the nice thing is that, you know, you have the psychotherapist end, obviously, of what you do, but that's another really important, you know, part of one of your hats that you can bring out and actually put the icing on the cake to helping people. At least that's the way I see it, for sure. Mm-hmm. So what would you say, how many sessions does it usually take to create a shift in the energy field and achieve the desired change?
Well, that's the amazing thing, Jill. Sometimes it happens in one session. Not always, but it has happened in one session. I had one woman come in who was, you know, totally distraught, overwhelmed, couldn't manage a lot of things in her life, and we did one session of the tapping. And at the end, she kind of looked at me and said, "You mean I just have to change my mind?" And I said, "Yes." And her face lit up, she smiled, and she said, "Wow. Okay," and I said, "Do you feel like you need to come back?" She said, "No, I think I'm fine," and that was it. So it does sometimes happen in one session, and I have had several experiences of that. Sometimes it might take two or three, but really it doesn't usually take more than about four or five. This is not long-term therapy. This works quickly, and you know, my goal is to help people get to the issue and resolve it quickly, not to keep going over and over things that have happened, but to move forward differently, to make that shift so you no longer keep repeating those patterns.
Right. And in fact, I mean, I've talked to people over the years that, you know, do the same work with the same therapist for, you know, two or three years and not feeling like they're getting anywhere, right? Whereas with you, with the added, you know, gifts that you have, for sure, it can move people through absolutely much
and
quicker
and more
effectively.
That's my belief, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't want my clients to become dependent on me. I feel that the most important thing is to teach them how they can move forward in their life differently. I don't want them to need me. So I don't want to be a therapist who people say, oh, yeah, I've been seeing my therapist, you know, for 5 years. I go to see her every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Because I think, well, I'm not doing anything. And so I usually tell people that, look, you know, we're either going to make some big changes within, you know, 3 to 5 sessions or, you know, or not. But it's, you know, that's what I want to do. It's like it's to get to the core and make the change quickly. And that's usually what happens.
Yeah, and that's true. You know, with the work, and that you're right. People do become dependent,
it's
very positive.
It's sometimes a common belief by people that therapy is really hard work and it has to take a long time. And right away, I tell people that's not true. It doesn't have to be hard. You don't have to suffer long. You know, it doesn't have to be very, you know, heart wrenching, crying all the time therapy and take a long time. It can be done easily and quickly.
Wonderful, yeah. So, are the effects long-lasting? Then, would you say? Like, what's your opinion on that?
Generally, they are, and I always tell people though, if you want change, you know, you're coming to me because you want to make. Important thing is you have to want that change, and you know, from there on, as long as you keep using the tools and staying vigilant in this work, sometimes there's a payoff to having some of the problems we have. And sometimes people can fall back into those potholes and get sucked back into the same pattern. So, you know, we work on that then. They can be the change can be permanent, unless there's some factor in there that is sort of sucking them back in, and then we would be looking at that as part of the therapy. You know, why?
Absolutely.
Why are you going back into these old patterns? And it usually comes up that there's a fear of change or a fear of loss, because they tell people, if you're in a relationship and it's not working, there's only ever 3 choices. You either stay with it the way it is, stay with it and change it, or leave it. And I tell people that, you know, if you make changes in yourself, because you can only change yourself, you can't change anybody else. So in the relationship, you start to make some of the changes that you might be working on with me in therapy. Your relationship with that other person is going to change. Because you're changing. In any equation, 2 plus 2 equals 4, you change one of those numbers, you're going to get a different answer. So if you start to work on yourself and change, then definitely that relationship is going to change. Either the other person will change as well and get onto a same path, and the relationship will grow and be healthy, or the relationship will end. And sometimes that is scary for people, so much so that they won't make the change, or they'll go back into the old pattern and say, but if I keep doing this and like standing up for myself, or you know, making these changes that we've come up with here, then my marriage is going to be over. Well, that may be true if that other partner isn't, you know, the other partner isn't going to change. And that's what we talk about. We say, well, then that's what you have to look at. You either stay with it the way it is, you change it, or you leave it. And it's totally up to the client. I never tell anybody what they should do.
No, and the thing is, you know, what you just said there is so important, that key of the 3 choices, because you're right, that's all they've got. They've got one of those choices, but what the key of what you just said there, which I think is so important, is the part that you can't change other people. You can only start within and change yourself, and that's such a powerful, like, I know at one point in my life, I didn't think about it that way, you know. I was like, oh, I'm going to change that person and make that better, but, you know, you can't do that. You have no control over other people and the way they behave, so it all, the peace to find in life all starts within yourself.
Yeah, and that's really important, Jill, because one of the things I will often go over with people in the first session is to say to them, in life there are events. Stuff happens, right? other people behave certain ways, or, you know, the weather or traffic, or, you know, your dishwasher breaks down or something, or you get a flood in the basement. Something happens. There are events, external events. Based on those events, we have perceptions. So we have a way of looking at that event. You know, we tell ourselves something about it. And based on how we perceive the event, we then have feelings about it. And based on our feelings, we act. We have behaviors. So many times when people don't like how they're feeling or behaving, they will blame the event. Well, if only that person hadn't done that, I wouldn't be so upset. Or, you know, if only I had more money or a better house or a better car or different marriage, I would be feeling different and I'd be behaving differently. And then what I say to them is, well, when you do that, we have no control over external events, other people, the weather, the traffic, whatever. When we place responsibility for our feelings and behaviors on things that we don't have any control over, we end up feeling like a victim, very powerless, very helpless, depressed, and a lot of the emotional stuff comes in then. We feel out of control, overwhelmed, right? So I say to them, well, you don't have any control over anything outside yourself. We can barely control our own self, so we can't control anything outside ourselves. But we do have 100% control of our perceptions, what we tell ourselves about those events, right? So that we can change. That's all about choice. So, like, two people could be out in the same snowstorm. One of them's complaining and miserable, and the other one's having fun making snow angels and catching snowflakes on their tongue. The thing is, it's the same snowstorm. The only thing that's different is their perception, right? So what I say to people is, there's only two mantras in life, yuck and yum, and the choice is yours. You can look at something and go, yuck, I hate it, or go, yum, I like it. It's like the cup is half full or half empty. That is your perception. And you can wake up in the morning and go, oh, I'm going to have a terrible day, and you probably will. Or you can wake up and say, I'm going to make today a good day, it's going to be a great day, and you probably will have a better chance of doing that, right? So our perceptions and how, and that gets back to the core beliefs and, you know, all that stuff, that is so powerful. And, you know, that's how we learn to sort of stop trying to change other people and stop blaming other people for our stuff. Because in life, there's our stuff, other people's stuff, and God or the universe's stuff, right? We can only do our stuff. We can't do anyone else's stuff. And we can't do God or the universe's stuff. So it's really important, again, in terms of that awareness, to know what is our stuff. And, you know, you have to start to be able to say, that's not my stuff. So if somebody gets upset with you, you know, you come home and you say, well, you know, I got to go to a meeting tonight, and your partner gets upset. Well, that's their stuff, right? That's not your stuff. But if you go and get upset now because they're upset, you're buying into that pattern again.
Right.
So it's about owning your stuff. Take what the responsibility for what's your stuff. Don't take it for anybody else's.
Mm-hmm. That's so powerful. I mean, just that one sentence. And the thing you said about making the choice that when you wake up in the morning in the snowstorm, that's incredible. That's so true. Like, it, again, it all starts within yourself, and that's a really neat analogy about, you know, you can get all grumpy about the snowstorm or, you know, making snow angels. I mean, that's true, because it's all your choice.
It's yuck,
right?
Or yum. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Yuck or yum, that's a good, I like that. So we all have heard that thoughts create our reality. We talked a bit about that earlier. Can you explain how this relates or is explained by energy psychology, Leslie?
Well, that's kind of what I was just talking about, Jill. It's like when we have a thought, you know, it comes from our perceptions, right? So those thoughts might be related back to some of those core beliefs that came from our childhood and our beliefs about ourselves and others in the world. So our thoughts come in, and they have an immediate effect on us. Sometimes I will demonstrate this in my office doing muscle testing. I think you're familiar with this, right, where I have a person hold their arm out to the side, and I gently push down on it with my two fingers, and I say, you know, hold, like, don't hold your arms firm. Don't let me push it down. And I'll push, and their arm will be firm. I can't push it down. Then I'll say to them, now, I want you to bring to mind a happy thought, something that you like that makes you feel good, and then I'll say hold, and I'll push on their arm again with my fingers, and the arm will be strong. The muscle is engaged, and it's strong. I can't push it down. Then I say to them, okay, bring to mind now a thought that is distressing for you, something that is upsetting, that makes you mad or sad, and let me know when you've got it. So then they'll nod or say, I've got it. And then I'll say hold, and then I'll push on their arm, and the arm will go weak. I can push it right down. And they're always amazed. They go, oh, my gosh. So then I always say, now go back to your happy thought, because I don't want to leave them with a negative thought. Go back to the happy thought, hold your arm, hold, and then I push, and the arm's strong again. And that's such a really clear way to demonstrate to people the power of our thoughts. Mm-hmm. When we are filled with negative thinking, we weaken ourselves in every way. And it's shown very nicely this way by the muscle testing. And it's a good way for a person to actually get a visual or an actual feel of what that negative thought is doing to them. And having been working with this for a long time now, I can feel their arm go weak before I even push. And I know you can do that stuff too. So it's like, it's interesting because as soon as a negative thought comes in, you can almost feel the energy drain out of their body. So then I say, well, think of what that's like. If you spend your whole life filled with negativity, living in that yuck world, what are you doing to your body? You're constantly draining it, weakening it. And why do you think illness sets in? Because, you know, we have our energy body, then we have our emotional body, and then we have our physical body. And if we don't clear the stuff energetically, it becomes emotional. If we don't clear it emotionally, like the anxiety, the depression, all the emotional stuff we have, if we don't clear that, it becomes physical. The physical body is the final frontier. So if we're getting sick all the time, what are we not dealing with that we could be dealing with either energetically or emotionally? So those thoughts are really powerful, and if we constantly live in that state of negativity, we are making ourselves sick. And there was a very interesting study down, it was Yale or Harvard, one a reputable university in the States, did a study on women who had cervical cancer, and they examined the polarity, the magnetic polarity, at the site of the cancer, and it was actually reversed from what it would be in a normal healthy person. So the interesting thing there is, did the cancer cause the magnetic polarity of that area to be reversed, or was this person living in such a constant state of negativity and stress that the polarity shifted? So for me, that's huge in terms of prevention.
Awesome.
You know, we don't want to be living in a constant state of negative thoughts. And further research done on brain patterns and brain scans and that have shown that when we have a negative thought, we have a thought, it comes in, and we all probably remember from our high school physics and that when there's a neuron sends a message across the synaptic gap and fires the next neuron. So this is how messages are sent from our brain out to tell our body what to do. So when we have a thought come in, let's say that you've had a car accident and you think of driving a car again. Now that thought creates a patterned response that the neuron fires and starts the next neuron, which is panic, fear, can't get in a car. So what happens is neurons that fire together wire together. So this becomes what we call a patterned response. Every time you think about getting in the car, guess what response you have. So what energy psychology does, and when we start working at it this way, is we bring the thought to mind. And like I said earlier, you think about that negative thought, and then you tap to bring the balance, the energy back into balance. So what we've done is taken that original thought, but we've done something different. We haven't allowed the body to go into that usual pattern of disruption. We bring the thought in, we tap to bring the body into balance. So that neural pathway is actually broken. And now what happens, and this is amazing, this is like magic, the neurons will actually reconnect. And I've seen film of this at that conference I was at last year where they show the neurons actually moving to form new connections. So there is physiological change in the brain when we make these kind of energetic shifts. So that old pattern of think of being in the car, going to your panic, no longer exists. And this is why this work does last a long time, because that pathway no longer exists. A new pathway has now been formed, that when you think of driving a car, you now go into that calm, balanced state, so it doesn't bring up the stress.
Because of the new connection with the mind.
That's the power of mind and thoughts, yeah.
That's incredible. Wow. I didn't know that, actually.
Exciting. I know. And this is just the beginning of this research. Every year, more and more research to support this is coming out. If the listeners haven't watched the movie called What the Bleep Do We Know, I would highly recommend it.
Oh,
it's about all of this stuff.
Have you
seen it?
That's quite the movie. Yeah,
so,
you can't watch that movie and not be changed when you finish.
No, it's a documentary about the nature of reality, and there are many professionals. Some are scientists, some are theologians, energy healers, chiropractor. There's a lot of people talking about the nature of what their work is showing about the nature of reality, and it blows your mind. The byline under the title is, What the Bleep Do We Know? Just How Far Down the Rabbit Hole Do You Want to Go? And that's mm-hmm. what it's like. It's like all of a sudden you have a whole different view of reality. You realize that everything is possible and that we do actually affect this world with our mind. And, you know, the chair I'm sitting in, you know, I'm tapping on the arm of the chair, it feels solid. But what the physicists are telling us is that you take this down to the smallest particle and there is more space than solid. So it's not really solid. It's just a bunch of moving particles. It's all vibration, energy vibration. And if we can affect that with our mind, think what we can do to our bodies.
Oh,
we can
I
feel.
Know. It makes your mind like it makes it just makes your
it's
mind mind
blowing. I know
it is. You know,
if
it's
you watch
like,
the movie, you need to watch it with somebody that you can talk about it with, because I probably watched that movie 12 times and I watch it again. You
and
know,
every time
so
you watch it, so I've seen it about 3 or 4 times myself, and every time you watch it, you see something different in it. You know,
exactly.
So it's really powerful. Yeah, you're right, your listeners. What the bleep do we know? Is Leslie just mentioning is incredible. If you want to know more about this, absolutely, that's a good suggestion, Leslie. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think you could rent it. I have rented it before at Blockbuster,
mm-hmm.
but
I've seen it there.
Find it online, or you know, just check mm-hmm. it. Just look for it online.
Yeah, I've seen it in the movie stores for sure. I have seen it in there, so it is available. So do you use positive affirmations when you're doing your energy psychology with someone, Leslie?
Yep, we do, and I think we all know the power of positive affirmations. There are books written on it, and you know, positive thinking, and all of that. So as we do the tapping, there have been certain positive affirmations that have been found to assist in balancing the energy in each of the meridians. So as I have the person tapping, I'm also giving them affirmations to use. So for example, the heart meridian, I mentioned earlier the heart meridian, which may have to do with, you know, if it's clogged up or storing anger and resentment and that towards people. So the affirmation to balance that meridian is, I have love and compassion in my heart. I forgive them. They did the best they could. I forgive them. They're doing the best they can.
And that's the actual affirmation while you're doing it?
Sorry,
so that's the affirmation you're saying while you're doing it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and I say it with the people, and then I give them a sheet at the end that's got the tapping points and the affirmations.
Okay,
some of the affirmations are hard for people to do, and I always say, sometimes forgiveness is hard for a person. So I always say, forgiveness doesn't mean it's okay. It doesn't mean, you know, it was all right what that person did, or sure, go ahead, do it again. Forgiveness means letting go. I let it go, because when we hold on to that anger, for whatever it was that happened, we're hurting ourselves, not the other person.
Mm-hmm.
So forgiveness means letting go of it. It no longer affects me. It doesn't mean it was okay what happened. So often it's hard for a person to forgive. And then another point on our index fingernail, the affirmation, it's the large intestine meridian. The affirmation here is, I am lovable. I am worthy of love. I am clean and good. I forgive myself. I did the best I could. I forgive myself. I'm doing the best I can. That will often bring up a lot of emotion in people. They might cry, they might choke up, they might not be able to say it. And so mm-hmm. I say, just keep saying it, let's keep saying it, until you can almost see the shift. And then all of a sudden they can say it, and through all the tears and everything, and then it's like at the end when we stop, they go, wow, that was hard, but it feels better.
Wow, yeah.
You just have to allow it to show. So yes, there's affirmations, and there are set ones for each of the 14 meridians, but I'm always very... I'm always telling people to say positive stuff. I always say, don't say what you don't want to be true. Only say and think what you want to be true. You don't want to give energy to what you don't want to be true. It's like the law of attraction says that whatever we put out, we attract to us. And that's what the movie The Secret is about.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, and that's another movie that if people are if the listeners that are out there are new to this, what Leslie's talking about, that's another movie to watch, as well as What the Bleep is, The Secret. And, I mean, I know probably of every 10 people I talk to, you know, 9 of them have seen it, but certainly if you haven't seen that, then that's another one that you just mentioned for sure.
Yeah.
So what if the person doesn't believe the positive affirmation, Leslie? Like, what if they're sitting there doing the work with you and they're not even believing it? They're just sitting there and going, well, I'm not believing it.
And that does happen, Jill, especially the, you know, forgiving self or forgiving others.
Mm-hmm.
What I say is, it doesn't matter. Do it anyway, because your subconscious is what we're working on. It's not we're not dealing with just cognitive stuff here, you know, the thought process. We're dealing with the subconscious. And the subconscious believes whatever we tell it. So that's why if you go around every day saying, oh, I'm such a lousy person, no one's ever going to love me, the subconscious believes it and will put that movie in and play it, and that's your life. That's the program that will run your life. So I usually, you know, I say to people, only say what you want to be true. Don't say all that negative stuff. Don't think it. Just, you know, only say what you want to be true. Use the positive affirmations, even if it's hard.
And that goes back to what you said earlier about that it all starts with a thought. It all starts with you being in control of you, right? And so you're just winging back into that again, which is so important. So important.
Exactly. It all relates, right?
Yeah.
So I say to people,
you
know, if you're climbing a big, tall ladder, you don't keep looking down at the ground and going, oh, my gosh, I hope I don't fall. It's a long way down. What if I fall? Because law of attraction, you are more likely to fall if you're thinking about that. You know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. What you do is you keep your mind and eyes on the ladder and you say, I can get to the top, I can get to the top. You don't put in your mind what you don't want to be true.
Right.
Very, very important.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, that's right. It's all about that, again, going back to the thought, right? The beginning of the whole process is in responsibility, but then it's the thought.
Yes, and so getting back to what you had said about even if they don't believe it, it will work because the subconscious mind will hear it.
Right, exactly. So when a person wants to make a change in their life or on their self, what are the most important components that are necessary?
Well, as I said a few moments ago, a person has to want it, right? I have no magic wands in my office, just pens. So I say,
are you
people,
sure? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, actually, I do have one, but it's like. Point is, as I said before, a person has to want change. That's the first, you know, they have to want change. The second most important thing is to start visualizing and imagining what you want your life to be like. So again, don't focus on the negative. Start focusing on, well, you know, what do I want it to be like? Like, how can you get there if you don't know where it is you're going, right? You have to start in your mind visualizing that new state that you want to be in. So, you know, in your mind, close your eyes and start imagining, like you're creating a movie of yourself, happy and over this problem that you're dealing with, and, you know, seeing yourself maybe in a place you want to live with the kind of relationship you want. And even if there aren't a lot of details, just filling in the pieces that you can. There I am. I'm happy. I'm laughing. Starting to see yourself like that. See yourself in the kind of job you want. See yourself, you know, getting the job, getting the interview, doing well on the exam, whatever. Start visualizing it. The third step is you have to believe it. And this is where we get back to, again, some of, you know, it's important. We can't be putting the negativity out there. If we constantly say, ah, this isn't going to work, I'm not going to be able to do it, well, guess what? We've just sabotaged ourselves again. It won't happen. So I say to people, you've got nothing to lose and you've got a lot to gain, so why not just take that leap of faith and say, I can do this, right? And then the fourth and most important step is to feel it. Because once you create that movie in your mind and you start imagining how you want to be, then you sort of step into that movie and you feel it as if it's already happened. So it's, you know, your body then starts to feel it. And what we know is that at a cellular level, every cell of our body has memory. Not just brain cells like we used to think. Every cell of our body has memory. So when we feel it, when we step into that imagined future that we want and we start to feel it, the body thinks it's happened. So it's like sometimes I'll have people doing relaxation. I'll have them say, you know, lie down. Imagine you're on a beach. You can hear the waves. You can feel the sun. You know, you can smell the air. It's as if they're there and their body will start to slow down and relax as if they're really on that beach. And they've done research with, you know, electrodes on people's heads to measure the brainwave patterns to see how they change when a person's meditating. So we know that we can create that state, and if the body remembers it, it will go there again. It's like we've created a future that already exists. Your body believes it's happened. Your subconscious believes it because that's what we're telling it. So it's almost, this is where the magic comes in. It's like you've created the future, you just have to catch up to it. So those are the four most important things. You have to want it, imagine it, believe it, and feel it.
Wow. Yeah, it makes so much sense. So I've had, you know, a couple people say that it's difficult, and they feel that they don't, you know, have control, or they can't control their thoughts, or they can't slow down their mind. How can you help someone with this? I understand, and I've heard, actually, I don't understand, I know that you have a meditation CDs out there, and I've listened to one of them, and it's so amazing. Talk a bit about more about that, Leslie.
Well, Jill, you know, stress is one of our biggest problems in life today, and it's the biggest cause of illness. And life is very busy. We're all like hamsters on the treadmill. And it can get out of control sometimes, and people have a lot of difficulty just slowing it down. So I do have a meditation class every Tuesday nights from 7 to 8. We're on a break now, but we're starting up again at the end of April. And what I do is I work with people individually, but also I have this meditation group where I actually help people learn how to slow down their mind and relax their body. Because it may be difficult for people initially. You know, often when people come, they say, well, I just can't quiet my mind. I just can't slow it down. So with breathing techniques, with some of the meditative journeys we go on, it's teaching the people how, so they can feel what it's like to just let go and actually stop that thinking. Because if you just say to someone, well, just stop thinking, just empty your mind, that's really hard to do, right? So practice helps. So we use breathing. We use various kind of meditative techniques. I also do that work on a one-on-one basis with my clients. You know, sometimes, again, people are stressed, they need to relax. So in my office, I do have a massage table on which I will sometimes have people just lie down, cover them with a blanket, put on some nice music, and I will talk them through a meditation, helping them to learn how to control the breath, control the mind, quiet the mind, and just drop all sensation down into their belly and become just aware of the physical body. Just let go. Relax and let go. Now, when I do this work with people, especially in the one-on-one, people say, well, I can do it in your office. It was great. I could let go. I could relax. And then I go home, and I can't do it at home. So I would get all kinds of jokes about, can I take you home with me? And I'd say, well, no, obviously not. But what has come of that are these CDs. Because people find it so much easier when they're listening to my voice talking them through it. And sometimes, you know, I'm talking them through just a general body relaxation. Sometimes I'm talking to them like we're going on a guided journey. You're on a beach, you're walking through this, you know, field, you're going up into this cave, whatever. I'm taking them on a guided imagery journey. So there's various things that I do on the CDs, but I now have made three CDs. One is sort of a beginning relaxation CD. The second one is a chakra clearing meditation. And the third one is a general relaxation and a journey along a beach and up through the cliffs into a cave, which is actually a very deep meditative technique. So I've made these so that I can have something to give to clients so they can take it home and do it, because the more you do it, the easier it gets. And those are available actually on my website. You can actually download straight from my website. Just go under the Relax and Let Go pull-down menu, and they can be ordered right off my website, or I have them in my office.
Right, and I've listened to at least the one of them, and I mean, I've had quite a few people, and of all from all different backgrounds, say that, oh, you know, I don't like meditating, I don't know how to do it, I don't want to do it, blah blah blah. But sometimes when you have that CD where you can listen to it and you're guided through it, it makes it so much easier than having to do it on your own. At least that's the way I've found over the years. Is you know, you think, oh, I have so many other things to do besides meditating, but, you know, it's so important. And then if you get the CD out, you put it on, it's like you said, you know, you're guiding through it, but then, like you just said earlier, the more you do it, the easier it gets. So I visualize it like a muscle. The more you use that muscle, the stronger it gets, and it's the same thing. The more you do it, it gets easier. These CDs that you've just done are amazing. I mean, I just, you know, because, and then, like you said, they can't take you home, but they can now in a different kind of way.
It is hard for people because the busier we are, the less time we think we have, right? But the funny thing is, and this is one of those magical things again, the more we slow down, it's almost as if time expands and you feel like you have more time. You know those long, lazy, hazy days of summer that we used to feel when we were kids? It felt like summer went on forever. You know, when you're in that, and when you're on vacation and you slow down, it feels like time expands, right?
So
the more we rush in our busy world and get all stressed, the less time we feel like we have. So these CDs are only half an hour each, and so I tell people, even if you can only do 5 or 10 minutes a day, do it. Make that time in your day, because you will actually feel better, you'll be healthier, and you'll feel like you have more time.
Yeah, that's so true. And also on the tail end of that, Leslie, is that I know on a personal level as well as with people I've worked with that, like you said, even 10 minutes a day, I've done, you know, myself, for example, like I'll do, you know, a few weeks where 10 minutes a day and I'm, you know, doing it religiously. And then, you know, you kind of, oh, I'm too busy or oh, this. Or, and you start noticing that you feel different.
Yeah.
Like, and some of the clients I've suggested is, you know, for 1 week, do it for 10 minutes a day and then the next week, don't. And then it's amazing. Not one person has come back to me saying, oh, well, there was no difference. Like, every single person goes, oh, my gosh. And it's 10 minutes, you know? Like,
I
it's
know.
Not, it's not
and,
like
and what
hour.
I say to people is meditation is everyday living. It's a
yep.
state of mind. So it's not how long you do it for. What we train for is to be able to get to that deep, quiet, meditative state in a single breath. So that,
mm-hmm.
you know, you don't, you know, we learn, we practice, and we do our 10 minutes a day or 15 minutes a day or whatever. But eventually what you want to be able to do is when you're out there in the world and it's stressful, you can take one of those breaths that you've learned to do and immediately go to that deep state of relaxation because it is just a state of mind.
True enough. So even when you're walking around doing your regular life, you can you can get into that place. Yeah, and that's powerful. Like when you realize, when you understand that and when you get to that place, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so helpful. So if somebody comes to you and all they want to do is just talk about their issues, they don't want to do the energy psychology or anything else, how do you handle that? What do you do?
Well, that's fine. I never push this on anybody. This is, people come for various reasons, and some people have different ideas of what therapy is and that. And my brochures are in the waiting room, and they've, you know, maybe had time to look through them. So when a person comes in, I'll say, well, did you look at some of that other stuff that I do? And if you're interested, we can do it. So it's there if they want, but I never push it on people. We start with talking, and then I think of it as a toolkit I have with lots of different tools, and if it seems appropriate to use one, I might offer it and suggest, well, there's some stuff I do that's this, and I explain it to them, and if you'd like, we can do it. And if they say, no, that's too weird for me, I don't want to do it, can we just talk? I say, of course, and then we just talk.
Yeah, and that's good to know. But yeah, and that is so much like you. I mean,
some people
you
aren't interested in it, and it's a bit too far out in left field, they don't want to do it. So
yeah,
that's
and that's
just talk.
So,
and like,
you know right,
I have my big,
Yeah, and I know that about you and with the people that have seen you and you know, sung your accolades, that you don't push anybody. You allow them and honor wherever they want to go with it, with your suggestions, but certainly you in the end, you honor what they want to do. So, So I know you've studied the shamanism end of things. How do you incorporate that into your work, Leslie?
Well, again, it's one of those tools in my toolkit, and I did study shamanism with the Four Winds Society with Dr. Alberto Villaldo for 6 years, and it's a beautiful work. It's very nature-based. It's sort of what some people may think of as sort of native healing, works energetically, works spiritually, works, you know, everything is connected in nature and that, and we do things like clearing energy, and sometimes different terms are used. You know, sometimes the term an extraction might be used to clear sort of negative energy from a person's body. We do things that we call soul retrievals, where in life as we go through all these stresses, sometimes in the shamanic work it's looked at as parts of our soul actually fragment and get left behind. Now, in psychoanalytical or psychological terms, we might talk about lost parts of self or different ego states and roles in that, but in the shamanic work, it's just a very beautiful way of looking at it, as if your soul fragments while going through these various traumas, and little pieces of it get left behind. And again, the belief being that we need to be whole to be well. We have to go back and collect these parts of ourselves that have been left behind. So when we're doing that kind of work, again, sometimes it's very meditative, it's very journey-type work. Again, a person may be sitting or lying down, and we would actually sort of do a meditation and go through a soul retrieval, which is a journey where I travel with them. We go back and see what comes, see what's there, and see if we can ask some of these parts to come back. Now, that may be a scared little child, you know, who needs to be invited back, and we need to love them enough and invite them to come back. So it's just a different way of doing the same kind of work. Some people I find are very open to that way of looking at it and framing it. Some people aren't. So, again, my job is to sort of see what's going to fit best for the person. The shamanic work also is very, it involves a lot of beautiful ceremonies, fire ceremony, where we give things to the fire. So if a person is working through an issue, they may have them, like, blow it into a stick, and we burn it on a fire. That can be done outside with a big fire or inside with just a little burning bowl and a toothpick. But the idea of fire is transformative. So when we put something into the fire that we are ready to let go of, it's burned. It's turned from solid into air. So it's beautiful in that way. And there are other ceremonies, you know, that are just beautiful part of the work. But it's only there if people are interested in it.
Right. And with the shamanism, a lot of it is about ceremonies. And you're right. It, like you said earlier, it's one of those tool pouches that you have access to, which makes it even, in my opinion, I mean, that makes it even more powerful to see somebody like yourself that you have, you know, you have the solid sort of base of who you, you know, started off with, but then you've got these amazing tools in your tool pouch that you can access to help people. So that's amazing. So I can't believe we've only got 4 minutes left of the show, Leslie. Maybe you could just tell us, before we get to how people can find you on your website and that, just give us a really brief description. I know you do that equine-assisted psychotherapy work, which is incredible. Tell people a little bit about that so people who are interested in horses or would like that kind of therapy can hear about it. Tell our listeners about that.
Well, I studied this earlier in the 2000s, studied it for about 3 years, too, and studied with a group called EGALA, Equine Growth and Learning Association. And this type of work is very beautiful, where animals are actually part of the therapy. Now, in this case, I worked with horses, but some people have used, dolphins have been used in therapy before. And we know, you know, healing, the healing work of some of the dogs that are used in therapy with people. So working with the animals creates a beautiful space for people to work in, where it's not just sit in an office and talk about your problem. In fact, with some cases, the person doesn't want to talk. I've worked with, well, in particular, a young girl who was 15 and had been sexually assaulted on a school trip. And she didn't want to talk about it to anybody, but she loved horses, and her mother knew what I did. So she asked if I would work with her using the equine therapy. Now, the people don't ride the horses. We just sort of hang out with the horses. And my job is to sort of allow that space for whatever kind of emotional stuff comes up as the person is working with the horse, like patting them, stroking them, brushing them, leading them around, whatever, when the stuff comes up, to then work with it. So it's the animals aren't used as tools. They are actually part of the therapy. They are the therapist as well. And so we create this beautiful environment in which a person can just be and be with the horse, and they experience amazing stuff. It's beautiful, gentle, healing work.
Right, and like you said, with
the
that
animals
example,
are very intuitive. Yeah. They know when something's going.
Yeah, they know a lot more than we do. Let's face it. They know a lot more than we know.
Yeah, and they don't talk.
It's very powerful. Very powerful stuff. So, Leslie, how can people find you? You have to tell them how they can find you. What's your website? Tell our listeners.
Well, my website is my name. It's just www.lesleyhannell.com. That's LesleyHannell.com. And my phone number is 905-518-8283.
Wonderful. Leslie, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I've enjoyed having you here. You've a lot of amazing information. Thank you so much for allowing another extra half an hour with the technical difficulties. I do appreciate your patience. We managed, right? We pulled through. So thank you for being here. I've really, really enjoyed having you on the show.
Well, thanks, Jill. I really enjoyed it.
Good.
Talk to you soon.
So, everyone, so tune in next week to any of my archive shows, since I'll be working in beautiful Arizona. Don't forget to check out my website, jill-robinson.com. There's a lot of new information there. It's been updated recently, so that's very exciting. Remember to check out my Facebook, my LinkedIn, my Twitter pages. You can find all those on my website just by a click away, so check those out. There's always new videos and new photos that are on there, so check those out. So that brings us to a close for our show this week. Again, those of you who have hung in for the extra half an hour with the problem with the technical difficulties, I thank you very, very much. It's been wonderful having you on and listening to Leslie. Thank you so much. So on behalf of my guests, Leslie Hannell, and myself, Jill Robinson, we wish you much love, happiness, and blessings. We hope you have a wonderful, great, happy, healthy week, everyone. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.